Chapter 29, Arlene. When they arrived home from a morning of sitting helplessly at the hospital, the phone was ringing. "Let the machine get it," she said. There were 8 other messages showing. Arlene turned the volume all the way down. She could hear a honking of horns all the way from the Camino. The intermittent red light of a flashing emergency vehicle slipped by their window. "Wonder what the heck's going on out there," she said without much genuine curiosity. They had hit surprising traffic jams all the way home. "An accident, maybe." "That must be it, yeah." They tried to get a little nap before they went back to the hospital and before that night's vigil for Trevor began. Before they left for the vigil, Reuben brought the mail in for the first time in days. "Here's one addressed to both you and Trevor," he said. "So I guess you can open it if you want." "Who's it from?" "Jerry Buscani?" She just stood a minute, so tired she couldn't even remember if she knew a Jerry Buscani. Then it hit her. "Read it to me," she said. "Okay." Reuben tore open the letter and began to read out loud. "Dear Trevor and his mom, I know I'm not your very favorite person, but I'm going to tell you this all the same. First off, I want to say how very sorry I am for that time when you came to visit. Truth is, I was so ashamed I couldn't look either one of you in the eye. But now I did my time, and I'm living up in San Francisco. Not saying I've got myself all completely together, but I'm still around. And I paid it forward. Yeah, me. I really did. I saved somebody's life. That's big, huh? I can't think how to pay it forward any bigger than that. You know how when you get a big bridge like the Golden Gate, somebody might get depressed and want to jump? Well, I kept an eye on the thing for months, and then finally, I got a chance to talk some lady out of it. And I knew she's still okay, because we have coffee every week. And in case you're wondering, yeah, I'm still living on the street. That's how you keep an eye on the bridge. But don't you see? If I wasn't homeless, I couldn't have done what I did. So even from where I am, I could pay it forward. Maybe even do something somebody else can't. And that's the power of a simple idea. Well, just wanted you to know. Your friend, Jerry Buscani." As they backed out of the driveway, they noticed both sides of the street solid with packed cars, so close together, pushing so hard for space that they slightly overlapped both sides of the driveway, making it a tight fit to get out. And then, when Reuben had managed to angle straight out between them, he couldn't find a break in traffic. Traffic on this tiny little residential street. Arlene got out of the car and personally stopped the procession of cars with her body, giving Reuben a chance to back into the traffic lane. The VW crawled an inch or two at a time toward the Camino. For the first few minutes, they didn't comment or complain. Arlene glanced at her watch. "Why is this happening? I mean, today, of all days. We're going to be late if we can't get out of this jam." Reuben chewed on his lower lip and didn't answer. It was 7:10 when they hit the Camino, only to find police turning cars away at a roadblock. The main drag appeared close to traffic. Reuben did not turn where the officer told him to. Instead, he pulled up to the roadblock and rolled down his window. The sun had dipped to a slant behind the officer's head. Arlene looked straight through the windshield and saw the Camino clogged with pedestrians. Not just the sidewalks, but the street itself. Hundreds, just in this intersection. "We don't know what's going on," Reuben told the officer, "but we have to get to the vigil at City Hall." "Yeah, that's everybody's problem," he said. "These people are all here for the vigil?" "That's right," he said. "Your problem is not unique." Arlene leaned over Reuben's lap and looked into the officer's face. "I'm Arlene McKinney," she said. His expression changed. Right, you are, aren't you? Look, just leave your car here by the barricade and come with me. Reuben turned off the motor. They stepped out into the sea of bodies and followed the uniformed officer out onto the Camino. The crowd in their immediate vicinity seemed to notice, to recognize. A silence fell, directly surrounding Reuben and Arlene, and rippled out like a wake on water. A path opened up to allow them through. They were escorted into the back seat of a black and white patrol car. The officer turned on his lights and siren. Through the vehicle's loudspeaker, he asked the crowd to open a traffic lane to allow the family to pass. Arlene sat straight and rigid, squeezing Reuben's hand, staring forward through the windshield, watching the mass of bodies part, watching a ribbon of empty street from ahead of the car. "This crowd go all the way down to the city hall?" Arlene asked at last, jarring the silence. "It goes all over town," the officer said. "We got helicopters in from LA. We got mounted police coming in with horse trailers right now. Not that there's been any trouble. There hasn't. We just need more personnel. Local rental company donated some sound equipment. Maybe the people in a 4 or 5 block radius will hear. Rest will have to read about it in the paper or see it on TV. We got camera crews coming out of our ears." "How many people do you think we have here?" Reuben asked. "Most recent estimate stands at 20,000, but the freeway's backed up 30 miles. It's a parking lot. They're still coming in." The patrol car pulled over at the West Mall, and Reuben and Arlene stepped out. She reached for his hand and held it. The officer escorted them through the sea of bodies. A smattering of applause rang in their ears, loudest wherever they happened to walk. The grassy area overflowed with media equipment, microphones, cameras, news people. They occupied so much space that the non-media participants had to squeeze around the edges to allow room for the filming. It occurred to Arlene that these 20,000 people might seem like nothing compared to the audience who saw the story reported on the news or in the paper. It was all too much to take in at once. They reached an elevated makeshift stage where the sound equipment had been set up. Big, heavy rock concert speakers stacked on assembled 3-level catwalks framing City Hall. When they stepped onto the stage, the crowd grew quiet. Then a long, steady round of applause broke out. Chris Chandler slipped up from beside her. It felt good to see a familiar face. "Where did all these people come from, Chris?" "Well, it just so happens you're asking the right person. I've been conducting interviews in the crowd. The people I've talked to are from," he flipped through his notepad, "Illinois, Florida, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Bangladesh, Addis Cadro, London, San Francisco, Sweden. That little television thing I did went outside the country? 124 countries around the world, which is like nothing compared to the coverage we've got today. Most of these crews are sending this out live." Arlene raised her eyes to the crowd, knowing she could see only a tiny percentage. Thousands of people crowding close to hear. A light dusk had begun to settle. They were late getting started. She looked down at the cameras, saw them looking back. She knew by their red lights that everybody was on, watching. She stepped up to the microphone. The crowd waited in silence. She opened her mouth to speak. She felt slightly dizzy. The air inside of her head had taken on the qualities of walking in a dream. I'm not too good with words," she said. Her voice shook and cracked, and the microphone amplified that, ricocheted her tension off the neighboring buildings. The strength of the sound system startled her. The leaves on the oak trees overhead shivered at the sound. All eyes turned up to her in silence. "I don't even know what I'm doing up here in front of all these people. I just came here to wish for a recovery for my boy." Tears flowed freely at the sound of those words. She let them. Her voice remained steady, and she talked through the moment. The earth seemed to fall out from underneath her. She felt she might pass out. "I'm gonna turn this over to Reuben," she said. "He can talk better than me. I just came here for my boy." Reuben's arm slid around her shoulder and held tight. "Don't ever let go," she thought. "Don't you dare ever let go." If it wasn't for Reuben and a hope for Trevor, she'd have nothing left worth holding on to. Except, she thought, maybe this world that had come here to share this moment with her, maybe that was something after all.